This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might, shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Sharon Lawson Brown, just get him a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Let's go rinky dink.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking whole train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious.
5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richards. Sleeping, drinking coffee with no creamer. Same, no key for the beamer. Last year I was fresh, but this year I'm much cleaner. That's the sweet smell of success in the air. Came from the ghetto, gotta stress it so my message is clear. It's time to put the game back the way it was. Separate the suckers, motivate the thugs. I got this conscious game when you tell yourself
that you don't know. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the one and only Place to Be Podcast. Nation Network. I am your co-host, Justin Zero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And joining me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscola. How are you doing, sir?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 420 of the Gold Standard, the Mothership, baby. And, it's Indian summer. It's still warm out. Is it weird and unfortunate that the weather's still pretty good for hoops, and sadly the arsonist season has come to an end? Or is it because Cowboys' ankle now looks like a meatloaf?
First of all, it's Native American summer, and second of all,
seasons aren't racist.
The season isn't over. We're playing tomorrow night. That's our finale. We don't need the Cowboy to trudge on. It's not our fault. His ankles are weak.
Well, I knew you had. Well, you said you had the special road game. It was kind of like Raw out of the Manhattan Center.
The court was being worked on, so we had to move for the week. Okay. Normally we just would have skipped the week, but because it was only a couple games left, so we had to get in.
Okay.
But no, the court is back to normal, and tomorrow night we will close the season. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, this happened last year. It was like it was great out until December around here, the weather. But because it gets so dark, by the time we start, we'll never finish. It's already getting dark before 7, so the light forces us to end the season, which sucks. Because last year we absolutely could have played for like another 10 weeks or so. And we got hosts. I can't even imagine if I get another 10 games in. It's always very bittersweet. And like I always say, in the summer, we're at Flanagan Court. In the winter, we're at Pizzeria Uno in the Dunk. But
that's right.
So that'll be here before you know it.
That's right. Starting soon in November, yeah.
I actually went to Uno a couple weeks ago. And I never go, usually, because I go like 18 times in like 3 months during the basketball season. So
right.
It's always weird going there outside of it. And I felt it was kind of like a preview to get back into the mode of Pizzeria Uno. Since
that's at the mall, right? That's the one at the mall?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we pretty much go there for every game. So
I see.
It's easy and cheap.
And the pie's not bad. The food's okay at Uno. It's important.
They have like these happy hour appetizer things going on during the times we get there before the game, so that works out.
This
is an easy place to get like a big table for a bunch of us and get in and out. So
that's cool. That's cool. The Friar season starts soon. Stag season starts soon. Big East in general. Mm-hmm. Obviously we're in the throes of college football season at the moment. Mm-hmm. But this evening, JR, I feel like I've done a million shows in this building with a combination of the last pay-per-view, the last current pay-per-view. Then for yours and my Vintage Vault refreshes, I'm a little bit ahead So the first taping of 1994 was three straight shows in this building. And then we're here tonight. So inside the big steel box this evening, otherwise known as the Vintage Vault, we wrap up, JR, the calendar year.
Hey, what is going on here?
Nothing at all. Continue grading you and AC. Speaking of this week, JR, I believe it's Friday. Mr. Gosselaar is on a new show that debuts this week on Fox. Friday night called Pitch.
It's about him, Kevin James. Everyone's getting rebooted.
Yeah, he's. It's about a woman who actually plays Major League Baseball. She'll be a pitcher. I guess she has a kind of a mystery pitch nobody can hit. So she goes and plays for the San Diego Padres.
Well, I'm hoping that. I'm hoping Zach falls in love with her and Slater comes in and bangs her. That's my goal for the show.
Yes. And then they do a scene at a strip club, and that's where Jesse is.
Yes. And then Screech comes in with some kind of anti-zit cream, and they all get a rash.
And then there's the moral of the story at the Max at the end of the night.
And they show off. And the moral of the story is don't do Botox, because then we take a look at Lisa.
Yes. Poor Turtle. Poor Miss Turtle.
If you believe the early episodes.
That's right. Turtle-ay. Tonight, inside the big steel box, known as the Vintage Vault, JR, we conclude the calendar year of 2006. Yeah. We, of course, continue the creative year on our report card.
By the way, bad work by us, as the Mad Dog would say, not making episode 420 December to Dismember with Rob Van Dam prominently featured.
Mr. Buckner would have loved that. Right. I was talking with him last night. I didn't even think of that. That's right. Because by now he's completely forgotten. So tonight we conclude the calendar year with fire and a casket. A powered reunion. You know what got out of my head? I was going to say hearse, and then the casket got into my head.
Fire in the casket.
Fire in the casket. Let's take the field tonight inside the Vintage Vault. Let's just start the fucking thing. Armageddon, 2006. SmackDown, pretty solid. They have their champion back.
Yeah.
They have the longest reigning champion in the whole company at this point. You'll get to that in a moment. But an interesting show. I guess it's your point of view as a viewer, whether this is an important show or if this is the usual, you know, December throwaway to get to the new year. Of course, this
third,
is the,
yeah, third show in 6 weeks.
Third show in 6 weeks. Is it 6 weeks? 4 weeks?
It was six. It was every other week, starting with Survivor Series to here. Yeah. Okay. So this and Survivor Series were the normal month apart, and then ECW was jammed in between.
Right. December 17th, 2008. And six, live from the Coliseum in Richmond, Virginia. And as I mentioned a moment ago, JR, kind of weird for me because in the last week I've watched Backlash 2016 from Richmond. I watched three Raws from early 1994, all in Richmond. And now this show in the fine building of Richmond. So do you remember the last time we were in this building for pay-per-view?
I'm going to roll those dice and say Cold Day in Hell.
You are correct, May 1997, and this is the third pay-per-view in the state of Virginia. Do you remember the other one?
Great American Bash 04.
Correct. It was in Norfolk.
This girl is on fire.
Fire! So, third
and
pay-per-view.
And caskets.
That's right, caskets and hearses and infernos.
Sponsored by?
A game for PS2.
Call of Duty 3.
There you go. I knew it was some game for PS2.
That's a pretty big get for them, Call of Duty.
Yeah, no, it's huge
big
for them.
Big name, big title.
I'm sure the song is by guys who are playing Call of Duty right now after this one-hit wonder.
Well, always by Jim Johnston in the end, his version. This is like the eighth consecutive Armageddon we've had, or December pay-per-view that's used it, right? I mean, I feel like started in 99, pretty much, and I feel like they've used it every year since.
Yeah, did he even use it? In 2000, even though they used Skinnerd a lot,
I guess they
used it in 2002.
They used it for Survivor Series,
right?
And then I feel like it's been Armageddon since.
Yeah, pretty much, and it'll be that way for the next couple years.
Tagline: The end is only the beginning. Total buy rate: 239,000 buys.
Yes, 8,200 in attendance on this evening, and your announcers at ringside, the voices of the Blue Brand, Michael Cole, and John Bradshaw Layfield, who actually had a very entertaining evening. I really enjoyed them. We're going to get into that as we progress tonight, but They were very very chippy with each other tonight. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was actually led to a very entertaining show. Before we move on, because, you know, he laments that he has too much work to do anyway, what is this evening's Sutton Report?
The Satan notes, I read some of them. Batista is our SmackDown champion, 21 days, as we mentioned. Maybe you're right. Was it closer than 6 weeks if he's only 21 days into his reign?
Well, Survivor Series was the 26th. It was 4 weeks because Survivor Series was the 26th.
Oh, God. Really? And, so these were a week apart?
Yeah, and December to December was the 3rd.
Oh, sorry. So it's 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
Well, I guess
no,
not.
Four.
Yeah.
Three Jeez. Sundays in 4 weeks.
God sakes. That's crazy.
It was nuts. That's $105 on pay-per-view in a four-week span during a time of the year where you're buying Christmas gifts. Merry Christmas. Here's December to December. You asshole.
God, say, I didn't realize those were back-to-back Sundays. I thought it was.
It was. Yeah. Crazy, right? Never did that again. So, yeah. What else did our fine pond friend from across the pond have?
Our pond friend. Bobby Lashley, ECW champion, 14 days into his reign. So there you go. Chris Benoit, 68 days into his U.S. title reign. Brian Kendrick and Paul London, 210 days into their reign. And Gregory Helms, 322 days.
Which, by the way, JR.
Champion, yes.
Cole mentioned to JBL earlier that breaks the record for the longest title reign on SmackDown. Breaking JBL's record from Bash 04 to WrestleMania 21.
There you go.
So there you go. Gregory Helms.
Yeah, JBL talks about that, doesn't he? We'll get to my notes in a minute.
Yeah.
I feel like he mentions that. So.
Yeah, he does.
Okay. Releases on 12/13, Amy Zidane, Divas Search contestant, is released from her contract due to her bad attitude towards specifically Stephanie McMahon. Word is, Amy had bipolar disorder. There you go. 2 days later, Danny Doring was released. 21 matches, TV. He was 0-9. So he did a lot of work, I guess, on the weekly ECW.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't remember him. I don't remember him on anything else, right?
No, he never was on any other pay-per-view.
No, I didn't think so.
Right, SmackDown, 383 episodes, ECW 27. Here's some vintage news from the time. Vince McMahon changed his mind over the main event from Armageddon 3 times. 3 different matches were discussed. Batista and Booker T was one in a rematch. Batista and Booker T versus Booker T and Finley, and then the one that actually happens here tonight. The reason that Batista-Booker singles match didn't get greenlit was the previous two encounters didn't go over well with the fans and thought that adding John Cena to the mix would make for a better buy rate. Probably accurate. Dave Lagana was taking over reins of head of creative of ECW. A rumored match between Big Show and Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania won't be confirmed until February. It all rests on Big Show's recovery rate and Hulk Hogan's negotiations. If the new Rocky film does well in the box office, expect Hogan and Ric Flair to pitch to creative one more run as WWE champion. There you go. That seems like...
figures.
I'm guessing. During December to December, the crowd audio was muted. Melina was rather upset due to the crowd chanting she's got herpes and other vulgar chants. That's why the pay-per-view was moved to Georgia from either Chicago or New York to avoid those problems. RVD's getting heat for missing the annual Tribute to the Troops trip. A promotion that operates under the name AWA has been advertising Paul Heyman on their upcoming shows. WWE Legal came back with a notice saying that Heyman is still in a contract. Stephanie McMahon sees Daniel Rodimer as the new Diesel, wants him to start teaming with Rated RKO. He's already been teaming with them on the house show circuit, and she was like one of his big, or he was one of her big projects early on.
Yes.
I remember him. Hulk Hogan's looking to pitch himself and Vince McMahon versus Big Show and Eric Bischoff at WrestleMania. This is the time now where all the WrestleMania rumors were starting to seep out.
Big Show already coming back?
I know. Well, I guess. I mean, the stuff for Mania happened. Those rumors started pretty quickly, especially the him and Hogan one. So we'll talk about that. Head of creative for ECW was Gene Snitsky moved there. However the move goes, it makes ECW brand look like a place for rejects. That's nice.
The way you said it at first, I thought you could say, Raw head of creative Snitsky.
<You're>
like
right.
That was his job. Everyone will be having everybody wrestling with no shoes on. That was funny.
And then Oleg Prudius defeats Scotty Too Hotty in the dark match.
Ah. Okay. All right. So.
It's gonna be Kane!
It does. By the way, you mentioned a fantastic movie in the notes, Rocky Balboa. Remember? That movie was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous film.
Very excited.
Mason Line Dixon. What were Duke's three words?
Hurtin' bombs. Oh, that's
blunt.
It.
Yeah, well, that's
it. We're going to build some hurtin' bombs.
Blunt force trauma. I got to watch that again. That might have to be a visit to the compound episode when we have some of those Gansett America's Cups in us. That'd be a good movie to do. How about all the Rockies? That'd be pretty cool. All right, let's begin. You know, one half of our first match. They're calling this a triple main event. I think they thought this was one of them. As what would be considered repercussions from No Mercy or Survivor Series, and giving this other guy, quote, competition. Give us the skinny, JR.
Well, on 12-1, Teddy Long opened SmackDown by announcing that MVP would face off against Kane in an Inferno match on pay-per-view. Later in the night, MVP and Undertaker fought to a no contest when Undertaker and Mr. Kennedy got involved. A week later, Long warned MVP that if he backed out of the Inferno match, he'd be fired. Later in the show, Kennedy and Kane faced off and MVP got involved, helping Kennedy beat down Kane. After some Undertaker theatrics, the lights went out and the Kane's pyro lit up the ring post as MVP stood alone in the ring. And finally, on 12-15, Taker and Kane teamed up to fight Kennedy and MVP to a double countout. And I really liked this kind of feud that was going on with the four guys. I thought it was a good feud. It kept Kane kind of chugging along on SmackDown. You get the Brothers of Destruction against the Young Brash guys. And I don't know. I thought it's been kind of cool because it's kind of like a tag feud, but it's kind of not. They're very parallel to each other. Kennedy and MVP are very similar. They're very brash. They run their mouths. You got Kane and Taker, kind of the stalwarts. I really liked this whole feud. I thought it really built legitimacy for both guys. MVP's mouth and actions keep pushing him into hot water. And I thought MVP was great here as he comes out alternating between being brash but also kind of being freaked out. I thought the whole feud was built well. I thought the visual of the Inferno match was great. I don't feel like they've done enough of these. Mm-hmm. It looks so good. Like, it always looks impressive to me whenever they do it.
Right.
Kane strikes early, shooting MVP around the ring and smacking him around. MVP keeps trying to escape Kane, but every time he claws back in, he gets closer to the fire. MVP hits a high cross body as the flames shoot up. I thought it looked awesome there. MVP follows with a mafia kick and a hard clothesline, but Kane sits up and comes right at him. Kane hits a choke slam and then rips off a buckle pad and lights it on fire. MVP thwarts him with a low blow and chucks the pad to the floor. MVP hits two low drop kicks to kick Kane out of the fire, but Kane dodges a third and MVP barely stops short. Kane cracks MVP with three clotheslines and a side slam, but MVP recovers and climbs to the top. But Kane pushes him to the floor and then dives on top of him, so both of them flew over the flames. I thought that looked cool, too. Kane and MVP alternate, trying to push each other into the fire until Kane grabs him by the throat and shoves him into the fire to win. Well, it kind of slowly shoves him backwards into the fire, just enough to light his ass on fire. MVP scurries around the ring, burning until officials put him out. I thought it was a really fun little match. I thought the gimmick was used well. MVP wins here, even with the loss, because he builds cred. He's a tough guy. He hung in, got lit on fire. I thought this was really the turning point for MVP, where he breaks out of that kind of joke, overrated Terrell Owens character, becomes legitimate. Like, I always felt like this is the match that gets him there. MVP elevated. Kane wins the feud. I thought JBL was awesome here, ripping Teddy Long for putting these guys in the situation, or especially MVP. That was a really good opener. This is always one of my kind of guilty pleasure feuds, only because big part of it is that I'm a big MVP fan, and I liked that they legitimized him instead of making him look like a goof.
Well, first, two things before I get to my steps. Number one, MVP was missing one thing, and that was a signed basketball from Phony Fun. Secondly, I concur with you about JBL. I mean, he was off his rocker for this whole thing about Teddy Long. And I can't believe he never got yelled at for calling him a peanut head.
Well, that was his old nickname.
Yeah, that's true. No, yeah, I knew. Yeah, I know. I just didn't think he'd keep doing it. But that's fine. All right. Step one. I was very leery because of the way Inferno matches are booked. If you remember the first two, we had Unforgiven 98. And then the hell was the one in 99? That wasn't a pay-per-view match. Was that a Raw match?
Did they do it?
Was it Backlash 99? Remember a Taker lit the teddy bear on fire?
That was on Raw.
Okay, that was a Raw match. Okay. I had a feeling. I don't remember being a pay-per-view in 99. And obviously, you know...
It's crazy they had the restraint to wait that long to do another one.
I know. 7 years. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
You would have thought that him and, you know, him and Triple H would have done it at No Mercy 02, maybe set Katie Vick's casket on fire. I just listened to that vault a little while back. But I was a little leery because, you know, MVP's solid. I love his character. I agree with you. As a wrestler, he's okay. You know, he's still learning a bit. Kane's Kane. But obviously when you got those gas things around the ring and there is legit fire, you gotta wrestle with a little apprehension. So I was a little leery this was gonna end up being a stinker because of the way that they had to go into the match without actually getting hurt. Step two, I bet JBL was told backstage or maybe in his ear to support MVP, because if you remember No Mercy, he was trashing him like crazy, like you would Miz later. Trashing
Well,
MVP.
I think that was part of the story, though. So I think he was trashing him for the eventuality when he started to piece it together and show some guts, and then he starts coming around on him. So I wonder, like, how much of that was long-term story plan.
Possibly. No, it's definitely a good theory. But because he's a complete 180 from when he was at No Mercy. Mm. Obviously, he was in one of the Survivor matches at Survivor Series, so he wasn't in a singles match. He was in the thing with Taker and Kennedy. And step three, I think it was also evident that looking at if you go back to Unforgiven 98, which was the only other pay-per-view Inferno match, that the guy with the top on would probably lose, because the way Kane is now, until, of course, we realized that, you know, his butt was on fire, but he did have a full body suit on. Kane had that big, like, fucking weird sleeve thing with all the wrapped up fire retardant stuff on his arm at Unforgiven 98. So you say to yourself, now, you know, Kane doesn't have a singlet or whatever anymore. He just wrestles in regular tights. You're thinking, what the hell is he going to catch on fire? Because I actually thought MVP was probably going to win this match.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it'd be a big win for him. Like an accidental thing, like Kane tries to boot MVP, but he misses and sets his, you know, foot on fire or something. I thought it would have been a legit win because remember, he's a couple of matches behind Kennedy. Like, this would have been his equivalent of Kennedy's match with Taker at No Mercy. This isn't his third match with Kane. This is his first pay-per-view match with Kane. So I thought, and Kane could eat pins at this point or eat losses at this point. So I thought MVP was going to win this match. Does it hurt him that he lost? No. It's not like he got pinned. And JBL did a hell of a job of putting over the whole thing, like, you know, his ass is on fire and all that.
I think it's one of those times where he almost wins more because they weren't going to beat Kane clean. It just wasn't going to happen.
No.
So instead of getting like a cheap win where Kennedy comes out and they, you know, like we've seen enough of that now. It's like
Kennedy comes
out and helps pull him into the fire or something. Like, I thought him just going man to man, toe to toe with Kane and getting lit on fire almost helps him more than any kind of cheap win would have. Like,
no, you're right.
Here's a guy that was, you know, overhyped, never fought anyone legit, and now is coming into his own. Guys are starting to respect him. He takes his punishment. He goes out there and gets lit on fire. Like, it was almost like a, you know, kid taking a beating in the schoolyard to kind of prove that he's a, you know, not a pussy. You know what I mean? It's like,
he
went toe-to-toe with the bully in his own backyard, and he hung in. So to me, that almost is better than any kind of shifty win.
No, you're right. I wasn't saying – the only other thing, like I said, I don't think he would have beat him clean. I don't think Kennedy would have come out. I thought it was something like MVP, you know, dodges a boot and, you know, Kane sets his foot on fire or something stupid like that.
I'm glad they did this. I thought this made him look tougher.
No, I am too. I was just saying that I thought MVP would win this match clean, you know, win this match anyway. But I think the ending, and including the, you know, the apoplectic – let me see if I can say it right.
Apoplectic.
I was close. Behavior of JBL at the table, that he was just furious that Teddy Long put him in this position, I think helped MVP anyway. So MVP wins just the second Inferno match in WWE pay-per-view history, and Kane is 0-2 in those two matches. It's kind of like Taker with the early days of the casket match. We go backstage, I believe, JR, no? Or do we go right to the next match?
You're right. We do go backstage.
Okay.
Teddy Long's meeting the divas, and he says, Santa Claus is in the house. All the four ladies will complete a naughty or nice lingerie match. And I think this shit is so absurd. like, the women get all excited and giggly about the announcement. It's like, they make them look like such fucking idiots. Like,
really do.
Hey, you stupid bitches, you want to go get naked for everyone? Oh, my God, yes! It's like, sounds dumb. It's like,
sounds like EKM. It's like, Rotel, I got the whores in the locker room. I got to talk to them.
Yeah, it's like, they make them look so stupid. Like, they're all excited to go have this. Like, this is such an honor to go have a lingerie match. It's just... It's so stupid. It's just dumb.
Yeah,
like, I always found the shit goofy. Like, they make it like it's this big honor that they're being bestowed upon them to go out there and strip down. Oh, yeah. Like, they all get so fucking pumped up at this offer.
Like, they're going like, to win a belt or something. Yeah, it's like crazy.
It's stupid. It's so stupid.
All right. Next up, JR, we have our first title match of the evening. The WWE Tag Team Championships, a.k.a. the Blue Belts, are on the line. Your champions still the exceptional team of Paul London and Mr. Brian Kendrick. Originally to take on one of my favorite teams, I remember it was one of your favorite teams too, the old school grizzled limeys of William Regal and Squire Dave Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
God, I love that team. So great. But as JBL would see, the old peanut head himself came out and switched things up, JR. What did he do?
All right, so a little bit of background. So Dave Taylor, third-generation wrestler,
yes,
started his pro career in England way back in 1978, competed throughout Europe until the mid-90s, where he hopped across the pond to join WCW. Esquire Dave Taylor, he teamed with Lord Steve Regal and Earl Robert Eaton as the Blue Bloods, remained with the company until 2000. Joined WWF as a trainer in 01. His run was short-lived after he left after refusing to move to Cincinnati. Can't blame him. After opening his own wrestling school, Dave Taylor had a stint with TNA and then returned to England for a stint as well. In January 06, he rejoined WWE to train in Deep South Wrestling. While training, he began wrestling again in March, teaming up with William Regal. And on the 10/20 SmackDown, Regal introduced Taylor, and the two began competing as a team. On 12/1, Regal and Taylor cost London and Kendrick a non-title match against Eminem. The next week, the Brit struck again as he defeated the champs in a non-title match. The champs got some revenge on 12/15 when they teamed with Jimmy Wang Yang to defeat Regal, Taylor, and Gregory Helms. It was announced that Regal and Taylor were challenged for the titles here. However, before that happens, and I liked the setup as well, I thought London and Kendrick having a great reign, Regal and Taylor, fun dickhead team.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy Long says, fuck it. He comes out and says, you know what? Here's another Christmas gift. This match is going to be now a four-way match, and it's going to be a ladder bout. And we're mixing in the Hardys and Eminem, drafted back into cross-band tag action, keeping their feud going. And I thought all of a sudden we got a pretty good match on hand. I mean, I thought the one that was scheduled was good, but this is, you know, a nice little gift. It's a good match to showcase the division. You put the championships in doubt. The crowd is jacked to see the Hardys. Again, very much a superstar team here of two top-flight guys teaming up. Let me ask you this, though.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that the Hardys, and if this one your steps, you can tell me, wait. The Hardys and Eminem, did you feel that they overshadowed what was going on since they weren't legit teams on the brand?
Let me say that for my first step, because I kind of mentioned that when I think of Regal and Taylor. So I'll hold off.
Okay.
I'll hold off.
All right. Back at it. So here we go. Everyone pairs off and brawls to start. The heels eventually clear it out, leaving the Hardys and Leonard and Kendrick to go at it in a bit of a dream match, I would say. Both teams land shots, but the Hardys hit Kendrick with a double wheelbarrow slam, and after another big brawl, Regal and Taylor work over the champs with their suplex offense. Hardys and Eminem battle in the aisle over the ladders, and then Regal and Taylor swat away the ladders, trying to avoid having to get in that type of situation, which I like the psychology they have throughout the match, where they're afraid of climbing and they're just not used to being, you know, they're not comfortable in this environment. First big ladder shot comes from Jeff to Kendrick, but London comes back and takes out Matt and knocks Jeff off the ladder. After more brawling, Mercury climbs the ladder, but Hardy tips him off of it onto Nitro on the floor. Matt dives out onto Taylor on the floor as London and Kendrick come back in the ring. Matt yanks Kendrick off the ladder, but Jeff whiffs on a poetry in motion and crashes into the ladder. Matt cuts down London with a clothesline as Kendrick scales the ladder, but Matt yanks him hard to the mat. Nitro suplexes Regal on the floor as London dropkicks Matt onto a ladder, and then Kendrick hits a double stomp off the top onto Matt, who is prone on the steel. Eminem come in and pick up the scraps and then set up a ladder seesaw. They hoist Jeff on the top rope, but Matt breaks it up, followed by Jeff leaping off the top and slingshotting the ladder into both of their faces, of course destroying Mercury's face in the process. An absolutely disgusting spot that could have killed Mercury. He is lucky he didn't die on this spot. His face swells up immediately, and probably one of the all-time sickest spots, and at least in WWF history for sure, up there with like Sid's broken leg and a few others. I thought it was just insane how his face blew up like immediately. Like I mean, within like 3 seconds, his face is swollen beyond belief.
Yep.
Pouring blood. He's writhing on the floor. The match continues. Regal and Taylor, I thought, did a great job, depending on your perspective, of keeping the match on track through the chaos. As they come in, they're working over the champs and trying to keep everyone kind of together as Mercury's trying not to die on the floor. They finally start using the weapons, ladders as weapons. Regal chucks London onto a ladder neck first with a half Nelson throw in another crazy spot. Regal starts to climb but is hesitant and tells Taylor to do it, with Regal pushing him up the ladder. Kendrick makes a save and things break down again from there. Cole says Mercury's already en route to a hospital. I mean, the match isn't even over yet, so that's how you know it's pretty dire. Jeff sets up a huge ladder on the floor and climbs it, but Nitro dropkicks the ladder and Jeff gets hung on the top rope. Nitro uses the ladder to take everyone out and rides it on top of Regal. Nitro clears the ring and climbs, but Kendrick stops him. London then dropkicks Nitro off the ladder as Matt comes in and also climbs. London fends him off, and Matt backdrops him to the mat, and after all, then he collapses. Jeff climbs as Nitro meets him, but Jeff takes him over with a sunset flip powerbomb. Regal and Taylor return, but Matt fights them off until they overpower him. Regal and Taylor both try to climb ladders, but Kendrick stops them. Kendrick takes Regal off the ladder with an ugly sliced bread that almost killed both men. London crawls in the ring and dodges Taylor to grab the titles for the win. This was a pretty crazy match. A lot of wild bumps and hard-hitting offense. The crowd was into it the whole time thanks to the star power and the crazy spots. It's memorable, of course, due to Mercury's face, but I thought the rest was pretty good, too. It's a huge win for London and Kendrick. When you look at all the guys they outlasted, the veterans, the Hardys, Eminem, like all the different star power that they beat out. It was fun. I thought it was weird and stupid that they didn't promote this ahead of time. I thought it could have been a big-time draw. Instead, they just kind of... whatever, did this surprise, which I guess is nice. But again, like we mentioned in the notes, it seemed like Vince was all over the place during these couple weeks.
Mm.
So they probably didn't even think of it.
Right.
And added it at the last minute. But I thought it was pretty good. I mean, probably one of the better matches this year we've seen. I thought it wasn't just ladder bumps. It was kind of well-worked ladder bumps that made sense. And then throw in Regal and Taylor suplexing and grinding guys down in the middle of it, plus the Mercury stuff. I think made this a pretty good match.
Yeah, I think this is a match we may discuss at the end of the show when we get to the report card. Could be one that goes on the list. We'll think about it as the evening progresses. Step one, let me get back to your question that you asked me before. I kind of felt bad booking-wise for Taylor and Regal, because I thought if this was stayed one-on-one, I thought they were going to win the match. I thought that this was going to be the end of this reign. I don't know if they would have won it again, but I thought this was it for London and Kendrick. I thought Taylor and Regal were going to win the match if it was just one-on-one. I thought they were going to win. I thought there'd be some kind of chicanery, and the Lord and the Squire would be tag team champions. So I was a little bummed when they added to these two teams, spectacular teams as they are. Although, great kayfabe character work by JBL that both teams are split brand teams. Remember, Nitro and Jeff are on Raw. So it was funny that he made that point. Of course, Jeff was still your Intercontinental Champion. More on that next vault. So that was interesting. So I was a little bummed because I thought that Regal and Taylor were going to win, and it would have been neat to have these two grizzled guys as tag team champions. So to answer your question, yeah, I thought slightly overshadowing, but again, we were handed a great match, so I can't really bitch in that aspect. But I did feel bad for Regal and Taylor because I thought maybe they were going to win the match and be the champions. Step two, that ladder shot's legendary, and not in a good way. Literally, it hits his face. We get a close up, and literally, you can't see his left eye. It's already gone. It's already puffed out. I mean, like his face is open. Like I think the ladder hit between his nose and his left eye. Like that, you know, kind of bend in your face near where your nose is on the left side. And I think it just opened his head up, and blood's just fucking pouring. It's like Vince at Vengeance 03. I mean, it's literally like a faucet of blood. And I can't believe they didn't even bother cleaning it. Yeah. These guys are rolling each other around on the floor for another fucking, 9 minutes? And there's like just blood everywhere. It's gross.
Yeah, gross. I guess they probably weren't even thinking about it. They were just watching, trying to make sure Mercury didn't die. That'd be my
guess.
They
freaking freaking faint. But I mean, it's fucking gross. I mean, it's not like a little bit. It's not like blood in the canvas that kind of like seeps in and dries up. I mean, it's like wet gunk all over the canvas, all over the... you know, the pads outside, and they were still doing shit out there. So let me ask you something. Well, let me do my third point, and then I want to ask you something. And step three, statement win, as you said, statement win for London and Kendrick. Think about the teams, JR, that they've beaten. And we've talked about it. And they've had great matches. You had the Pitbulls. Then you had Stevens and why can't I think of his name?
Casey James.
Yeah, Casey James. That match. And, I mean, they've been good matches, but, again, you're talking about star. You have two grizzled veterans and then, you know, one of the greatest tag teams of all time and one of the greatest tag teams of the year in this match. And it wasn't like a walk in the park. They took their bumps and they survived.
Mm-hmm.
Huge statement win for London and Kendrick. No doubt about it. So in that sense, I was happy they won. Let me ask you something. We were talking about, you know, the WWE as a company these last like 4 months that they've just all been just roided up and fucking HGH'd up and everybody's acting like assholes and everything. And now you look at this and you see a lot of crazy bumps and you saw some shit in the first match. Do you feel like, we've said that Vince seems like he's kind of off the pedal or whatever. Do you think this is the worst in terms of discipline that this company is right now in history?
No.
I mean, the matches are reckless. You know, like that move with the fucking with Mercury's face. I know it was an accident. I mean, you know, we've seen guys get hit in the face with ladders before. But do you think there's a recklessness in the company right now or no? You think it's just a isolated accident?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. I don't think it's the most. Like, I feel like the 80s, things were way worse and more unpunished behind the scenes.
Right.
I think, like, on screen with the product, yeah, I think things are getting a little out of control. And I still find it crazy that everyone always talks about the Attitude Era.
Right.
And, you know, 99, Vince Russo, Crash TV. I will put up anything since the 05 move to USA until, like, mid-07, I think is up there with any other year as far as being, like, over the top, raunchy, violent, you know, juiced up, coked up, like everything. You know what I mean? It's just, I think you're probably right. Everyone's really out of control. It's like, I don't know if this spot is part of it, but they're definitely pushing these guys with the gimmick matches, with just in general. Like, everyone's HGH'd up, like you said. The sex stuff, like, everything is just very, very high strung and, you know, just juiced up across the board. Like, they needed, as terrible as it is, because it didn't need to be what it was, but they needed some kind of wake-up call. Eddie was it, and then they kind of ignored it and just kept chugging along. They needed something to really shake them up more.
Right.
And they get it. They get it big time, but they're, like, spiraling right now, for sure. It's not a surprise that TNA was challenging them a bit during this time period.
Yes.
Because this is one of the few times TNA was definitely a bit of an alternative. A lot of focus on in-ring action. A lot of focus on reality-based storylines. Not all of them, but the bigger ones.
Well, I
mentioned
also,
Ring of Honor, too, was big at the time because of what they offered in-ring-wise versus what WWE had going on, which is a lot of just... I mean, they had good matches going on, but, yeah, just over the top.
No, it was over the top. And yeah, I mean, you could argue that TNA's roster wasn't better than WWE's, but it was their best, which makes the alternative. I mean, you look at the guys. Kurt's there now, and Kurt, you know, we could say what we want, but, you know, Joe, AJ, Shelley and all the X-Division guys, Daniels. I mean, there's a lot of great talent in TNA. The mismanagement problem wouldn't probably rear its head until probably 2010. And it just seems like they're just off the rails right now. I mean, like, we're making fun of it before, but, hey, Teddy's going to walk in. Hey, girls, want to walk around half naked for all the guys out there? Yay! I mean, it's like, you know, it's like ridiculous. In 1999, because that was the culture at the time, nobody blinked an eye. But now you're like, are we still doing this? You know? Not that they weren't hot, and we'll get to that later. But, I mean, it's ridiculous. And then this, I mean, Mercury was, I mean, that's bad. We don't see him for a while. Quite a while.
No, not that long.
Well, doesn't he... Does he actually... Well, yeah,
he's
I guess...
He's back in like 4 weeks.
Yeah. Was it really? I thought it was further back than that.
No. Nope.
He shouldn't probably have come back that soon, maybe. But...
Well, So Sun had a note. WWE.com, Mercury posted, I've shattered my nose, or it was an interview with him. I've shattered my nose around the bridge area. Instead of bruised and swollen, Mercury was severely injured at last night's pay-per-view. I have 4 fractures on the inside of my nose, 5 stitches on the inside of my nose and my cheek, and 15 stitches on the outside of my nose and cheek. My left eye is swollen shut and continual internal bleeding from my nose and eye. And of course, I guess we'll get this eventually, but the sad story is he had substance abuse problems, and that's remember why he was taken off TV earlier in the year.
Yep.
And then he gets back addicted to pills because of this injury and ends up derailing him for quite a while.
Yeah.
So shit luck all around. It's a real nasty spot.
It is. It really is.
I mean, bad timing. I'm not going to put this spot. If you want to say the idea of these gimmick matches as a whole was a problem. I mean, this spot, like, I don't think was extra reckless than anything else they were doing.
No, they've done.
The chair shots during this time period are disgusting. I mean,
yeah,
you know, we didn't know a ton still about concussions, but my God, every pay-per-view we've seen is like one or two disgustingly unprotected
vicious
chair shots. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. This isn't Ken Shamrock we're talking about, you know. And we hold no responsibility to Jeff Hardy at all. I mean, we've had Ricochet ladder shots for 9 years or whatever it is. So it's not. 7 years or whatever.
Yeah, he just
so
didn't move in time. I mean, that's...
Yeah, he didn't. He just didn't move his head in time, and he was like right on the tip of the, or not the tip, but like right on the foot of the ladder where there's probably a sharp spot. So, in any event, London and Kendrick retain the WWE Tag Team Championships in an exceptional match, even with one of the grossest moments in the history of the company. I don't think we go backstage. I think we go right to the next match. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, JR, about Mr. Layfield's vitriol to MVP has left, and his vitriol continues for somebody else. let's give us the deal.
On 12-8, Miz defeated Scotty Too Hotty and then mocked and attacked him after the match, only stopping when Boogeyman showed up and scared Miz off with a mouthful of worms. The next week, Crystal Marshall joined Miz in the ring for a demonstration to prove he wasn't afraid to eat gross foods. After eating some disgusting stuff, Miz wasn't able to choke down worms. Boogeyman emerged from under a tray of worms that was on the table, scaring Miz and Crystal off. So, I think Miz is doing his best, trying to work his way up the ladder, builds some credibility, and he's slowly gaining some. JBL rips him as the crowd goes silent. Miz cuts a very rough promo, but it's just a glimmer of promise in his delivery. And like, you can see that he kind of gets it. He just hasn't had the reps yet to put it together. He's still very raw, but you can see flashes of it in there. Boogeyman's still hanging around. Fine use of him, I thought, in shit like this. Crowd actually perks up a bit when he comes out. Boogeyman lands a few strikes as Miz bails to regroup. JBL makes fun of Miz's haircut as Boogie yanks him back in and slams him. Miz elbows Boogie on a charge, and Boogie hits a post with a shoulder. Miz works the joint as Cole gives updates on MVP and Mercury. Boogie punches his way into control and catches Miz coming off the top. Hits a big tree slam for the win. Boogie spits worms in Miz's mouth and dances off. Short comedy match, fine card position was needed after those very heated openers. The match was no good, though. Miz still needs a ton of work, and Boogeyman's a Boogeyman. Mid-card comedy at absolute best. But again, normally you'd say this is something that should have been on SmackDown, but, you kind of needed a palate cleanser here, so it's not the worst thing.
No. You needed something to kind of spell the crowd
and
from
it's quick
that.
Enough. I mean, it's under 3 minutes, and they don't dick around too much before or after. So.
No, not really. He gets on the mic and does some bullshit, but nothing too bad. Step one, as I mentioned earlier, the vitriol that JBL had for MVP pretty much transferred to Miz. I mean, he really fucking hates him. There must have been something backstage. That's not one thing about JBL. Unless he's one hell of an actor, you could tell when he legitimately hates something, and he just hated Miz. More than he hated MVP. I mean, he just has no love for him whatsoever. At the time, remember, he was a reality guy. I think at the time, JBL thought that Miz didn't take this business seriously. So he must have been one of those there must have been some backstage issues there. Obviously, Miz, wises up as time moves on. But at the time, JBL probably just assumed that he's a, smart-ass prick.
Miz just needed work, yeah. I mean, he just needed time.
I mean,
it had been documented how much he loved wrestling, but yeah, I could see why a guy like JBL wouldn't, he wanted to see
take
more.
Take him seriously. Right, exactly. Well, if you saw the early interviews of tough enough. He had like all the DVDs and you know, or tapes in his room. And
yeah, talked about wanting to be a wrestler and talked about it nonstop on there.
Yep. So, step two, the match wasn't much. Just wanted to make that point. Just like backing up what you said, it's just 3 minutes of fluff. Step three. Do you think that Vince had thoughts for the Boogeyman for more serious things, or you think he's just there to shut up heels?
No, there's zero. Not at this point. Okay. The only glimmer was maybe like earlier in the year when he had the Mania match and everything. He beat JBL at the Rumble. Like maybe then, but by now he's strictly comedy.
Okay. Yeah, that was all I wanted to say. Again, we didn't know where. I mean, Vince was a, you know, 2006 was not one of his probably his best years mentally or psychologically.
Well, he had all the shit. He was going crazy with the Shawn stuff, the God stuff, Brett being back in the mix, you know, ass all over TV, his family all over TV, all the ECW stuff with Heyman and everything else. Like, yeah, just a manic year across the board.
Yeah. So there you go. Not much left. Boogeyman beats Miz and gives him some worms, and that pretty much is the end of that. I don't think we go backstage. I think we go right to the next match, right?
We do for a moment, where Chavo Guerrero dedicates his match to Vicky, who's in a neck brace, and she accuses Chris Benoit of abusing her and injuring her neck.
Yes, which leads us, JR, to our next match, which is our next title match of the evening. Mm-hmm. The United States Championship on the line. Your champion is still Mr. Chris Benoit, and of course, this is a rematch from the Survivor Series. Give us more as to what has happened since then, JR.
On December 1st, Chavo Guerrero defeated Chris Benoit in a non-title match after Vicky Guerrero got involved. The next week, Benoit found out he had to defend against Chavo at the pay-per-view. As he was being interviewed about it, Vicky showed up and smacked Benoit across the face. Later in the night, an angry Benoit dismantled Sylvain and kept him locked in the crossface long after the bell. On 12:15, things exploded in the ring. Chavo came down and accused Benoit of assaulting women. Benoit refused to apologize for knocking Vicky off the apron in Survivor Series and for what he was going to do to her or him at the pay-per-view. Benoit then locked Chavo in the sharpshooter and would not release, even when Vicky slapped him. Benoit finally released a hold and stared down Vicky before leaving. The Guerrero bullshit train rolls on, Scott. Chavo's push and storyline continues. Vicky's gaining steam as a heel. And I will say this, the Eddie stuff is fading a bit. Still too present, but they're moving away from it slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit's still rolling his U.S. champ, and he's muddled in this stupid storyline. Chavo attacks off the bell, but Benoit fights through it and works some offense, going for covers along the way. Benoit goes for a sharpshooter, but Chavo fends it off. The match spills outside where Benoit lays in chops, and then back in as Benoit starts to unleash the Germans. Chavo catches Benoit off the top, save the match, and then takes him over with a big top rope superplex. Chavo continues with strikes with a focus on the lower back, grabbing a near fall. Chavo hooks a brief chinlock before levying further punishment on the back. Benoit gets hung in the tree of woe, and Chavo hits a low dropkick but then whiffs on a second one and crotches himself on the post. Benoit pulls off out of the tree and fends off Chavo to hit 8 Germans in a crazy show of strength. Benoit hooks a sharpshooter as Vicky comes in with the title. Benoit releases the hold and then teases locking it on Vicky, but Chavo saves her and gets a roll up for 2. Benoit quickly locks the sharpshooter back in and gets the win. Again, a fine match, but the whole feud is just cooked. It needs to end. I thought Survivor Series bout was better. This had decent psychology. Benoit breaks out the 8 Germans to deal with Chavo. I thought that was a good touch because he wants to punish him for everything he's been doing. Benoit's reign continues. Hopefully Chavo's cooked. And, you know, in hindsight, it's not really a criticism of the time, but in hindsight, the Benoit-Vicky stuff is quite uncomfortable to watch.
I was going to get to that, yep.
Of course, at the time, you couldn't have known, but... I'm so done. It's been a year of being done with Chavo.
Yeah. Step one, I was surprised it was a rematch at all. To be honest with you, I thought this was a one-shot thing. We move on. Having said that, though, step two, I thought Chavo was going to win. Because I thought that Vicky would finally distract him long enough for Chavo to get... And I think... step three is another quick one, that ingenious switcheroo at the end where he gets rolled up and you thought that that was it, that that was the moment where Chavo finally outsmarted him and would take the title, and instead he just got rolled up again, got put in the sharpshooter, and that was the end of that. That moment where, and I noticed it today when I was watching it, when they recap that SmackDown where he's got Chavo in the sharpshooter and she's slapping him in the face, he's just got that look. And you're like, ugh. The more you see these things progress, the more visibly awkward it starts getting, you know, when you're looking at him. Was this better than Survivor Series? Or did you even not care?
Survivor Series is better, I thought.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. I thought if Chavo was going to lose this one, then just move on. I was like I said, I was surprised he got a rematch here. Getting the rematch, I thought he was actually going to win. And then when he's not, and then when he didn't, I'm like, all right, that's nice. Move on. We're done. So there you go. So Chris Benoit retains his United States Championship in a pretty, you know, average match. And hopefully this feud comes to an end and we are done with anything involving Eddie. Eddie should be resting in peace and we should not be picking the bones creatively of him. So next up, I believe we go right to the next match. And right? I don't think we go backstage. No.
Yep.
Next up, JR, yet another title match. I believe it is our last, yes, our last title match of the evening.
Which is crazy.
Yes, it is. Our Cruiserweight Championship is on the line. Your champion continues to be the longest reigning champion in the company at the moment. And that is one of my favorite guys of this year, Mr. Gregory Helms, who has been Cruiserweight Champion since the Royal Rumble. And finally, unlike earlier in the year when he kept wrestling like every single guy in the promotion, it is a one-on-one title match, JR. How do we get here?
We arrived here on 12-1 when, I'm sorry, we last saw 12-8. Jimmy Wang Yang defeated Jamie Noble to earn a pay-per-view Cruiserweight title match with Gregory Helms. The next week, Yang teams with London and Kendrick to defeat Helms, Regal, and Taylor when he pinned Helms with a moonsault. We last saw James Yun back in 2005 when he competed under the name Akio. After being released in July, Yun hooked up with Ring of Honor, remained there until WWE came calling yet again in May of 06. After working a tryout match on Heat as Akio, he impressed the company enough to earn that second run. On 825 SmackDown, Yun appeared in a vignette under the new persona, Jimmy Wang Yang. Yang would downplay his Asian heritage and say, if anything, he was more of a redneck and enjoyed that heritage much more. Vignettes would air for weeks, and Yang would make his in-ring debut on 925, losing to Sylvain. So, hell of a debut.
Yeah.
I remember the rumors of the time where that Vince loved this gimmick and was a big fan of Akio's / Jimmy Yang. It was, like, really into everything to do with it. So, take that for this.
Not surprised. Yeah.
Helms still going strong as Cruiserweight champion. Got a lot of visibility and exposure throughout this run. Helms is the longest-running champion in SmackDown history, passing JBL, which JBL calls out during his entrance. Helms has been very active, too, during this reign, which is great to see. He hasn't just one of those guys that has a long reign, like Gilbert. We don't see him for 8 months. He's been on TV and pay-per-view constantly. Yang is an interesting gimmick, getting a push, and is great in the ring. There's a good, solid mid-card depth now. Stalemate off the bell and a trading of offense by both. Yang levels Helms with a hard back elbow, and Helms bails to regroup. Yang keeps Helms off balance with a fast-paced attack, including a vertical suplex for two. Yang starts to work the arm, but Helms escapes and drives Yang off the apron into the barricade. Helms follows him out and hits a swinging neckbreaker on the floor back inside. Helms locks in a cobra clutch, but Yang eventually slips free and dumps Helms to the floor. Yang follows a crossbody off the top, but the match ebbs back and forth when they head back into the ring. The crowd is pretty subdued here as Yang takes over, laying a spin wheel kick and a missile drop kick for two. Both men end up on the top rope, but Helms hits a super swinging neckbreaker as JBL calls out the crowd for chanting boring. Helms comes off the top, but Yang hits him with a spin kick for a near fall. Yang tries for a corkscrew moonsault. Helms dodges it, and it's a code breaker for the win. Good. I thought it was a good little Cruiserweight match. Another solid defense by Helms. Despite the crowd, they worked hard, and it was a surprisingly fun show so far. It keeps churning along. Helms has been a great champ. It continues to roll, and I thought Yang was a really good addition to the division. Well, give me your steps, and then I want to talk a bit about Yang.
Mm-hmm. Step one, and I'm gonna back up your point that you said, because it was, I mean, it got bad at the end. JBL is just trashing these fans for chanting boring, and once again, it didn't seem like a work. I mean, he sounded legitimately pissed, unless he's just good at acting that way. I mean, he was livid. These guys are out there busting their ass, and these stupid fans chant boring. I mean, he was angry. And at times, when Cole's not talking, you can tell that Cole's probably like, Jesus, what the fuck is wrong with him? And Cole's trying to justify it, but, I mean, honestly, you really can't. I mean, how do you defend the WWE fans for chanting boring? You really shouldn't. So I thought that was
the match wasn't boring.
It wasn't at all. I mean, that neck breaker that Helm snapped off from the turnbuckle, that was pretty awesome, actually. It's one of the best moves of the night. Step two, I continue to say that Helms, and I've said this often, JR, when we've talked about him, Helms doesn't wrestle like a normal cruiserweight. Like I said, Helms always reminds me, and I'm listening to some of our older vaults recently. Helms reminds me a lot of Kidman, because Kidman was never really cruiserweight size either, and the two of them WWE Kidman, not WCW Kidman.
WWE Kidman.
WWE Kidman when he got a little beefy. They definitely added a kind of a sense of power almost to the cruiserweight division.
I think WCW Kidman weighed like 95 pounds at one point when it debuted.
Pretty much did. And then he had fleas. But Helms wrestles very differently than the other cruisers. And I always found that fascinating. And here's a case where, again, he kind of worked some power moves, big neck breakers, things like that. And Yang did a great job of adapting to it. So I've really, really enjoyed Helms as cruiserweight champion. He's made all these matches very different from like when Ray was champ or your boy Chavo or any of these other guys. He's made the cruiserweight title matches very different.
And these guys are all trying to top him, and he keeps grinding them out and picking up wins. And he's doing it. He's getting real wins too. He's not honking his way through this title reign. He's winning these matches.
Yep, I agree 100%. And step three, Cole and JBL, I said earlier I was going to bring this up. Even though JBL's been sniping, they really have good chemistry tonight. Like, JBL's going back and forth, and particularly towards the end of the Chavo-Benoit match, but here as well. I feel like, they don't have the chemistry quite that Cole and Taz did, but JBL's working pretty good, and he's kind of fitting in pretty well with the way Cole works. So this has been a great pay-per-view for them. I think they've been fantastic on this show. So those are my points. So what were you going to say about Jimmy? And just to kind of get this our discussion started on him, I love the Jimmy Yang gimmick. I think it's fantastic. I think it's really – it's funny. It's dopey. But it's something that the cruiserweight division needed. It's not more than just these guys running around putting on crazy matches. You need some of these guys with some depth and a little character development. And so I thought adding a gimmick like this was good for the division, my opinion.
Yeah, and like most guys, he bought right into it and really went with it. And I just feel like the cruiserweight division needed that building block face that they haven't had. Like that, Helms has kind of become the block of the heel side.
Right.
And they don't really have like that driving force on the face side anymore, with Ray kind of out of the division and Helms having reigned for so long, and Leonard and Kendrick as a team. Like, who's really who's in the cruiserweight division right now that's kind of the face everyone can get behind, kind of the leader on that side? And I thought Jimmy Wang was a good choice to do it.
Yep.
Like you said, he stands out. He's excellent in the ring. He was awesome as Akio. I mean, he was having great matches on Velocity every week as Akio. So I was always pleased that they brought him back, and Vince liked him enough to give him a push. I thought it was really good mid-card depth. So I guess my main question, do you think him coming back with this gimmick and character, when you're looking at this card overall, is SmackDown suddenly feeling a little more full than it had been for most of the last year and a half?
Yes, I do. I'll tell you why.
You really say since 04.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because you had earlier in the year, I kind of alluded to it when we introed the match. When they were sticking all the cruiser guys in one match, it made the roster seem small, believe it or not. Whereas you could stretch out the roster by adding more matches. So instead of having throw the cruiser in a match and whatever, put the belt up or something, I don't know. Instead, they're coming up with legitimate, legitimate opponents for him, and you've had London and Kendrick with now a great, great title reign as tag champions, even though you brought, you had to add two kind of half brand teams. But no one thought about that on that night if JBL had mentioned it. And now our main event could counter that theory about the roster, but we'll get to that after the break. But the cruiserweight division has definitely been the highlight. And you know why it's been the highlight, and I'm going to back up your theory. Chavo's not in it. It's all fresh guys we like, instead of his meandering crap, pulling the matches down. That's a key too, because I've talked about, because you could say that Chavo is in that group with Kidman and Helms, as he's slightly bigger than a cruiserweight. As a matter of fact, you know, he's wrestling, you know, regular mid-card matches, feuding with Benoit, feuding with these guys, and doesn't really belong back in the cruiserweight division. Of course, as we'll see in 2007, he does kind of go back. But with him gone, now we can really see talented cruisers again. No Ray, no Chavo, like fresh, young, or moderately young cruisers that have kind of stretched the division out a little bit, thus stretching out the roster on SmackDown. So I agree with you 100%. The roster definitely looks a little more inflated because I think of the cruiserweight division and the kind of more guys you see on the regular weekly shows. Obviously, on the pay-per-views, it's a little different, but on the weekly shows, and I believe I was starting to do the – I think I started doing the SmackDown recaps at this point on the old board, I think, by the end of 06. I remember doing almost all of 07. So I might have been – I'm pretty sure I was watching weekly now doing the reviews.
No, I think we started at the end of 07. September 07 we started.
Oh, okay. All right, I must have been watching anyway. But I do remember feeling that the end of 06, the SmackDown show felt fuller. It may not have been reflected on the pay-per-views every time, but definitely on the regular show, you felt that there was some fuller shows and more action than there had been earlier in the year, and that there certainly was on Raw. So, Gregory Helms retains his Cruiserweight Championship in a very good match that I think we all knew was going to be very good. So why don't we take our break? Pretty good show so far, JR. Surprisingly good. Better than it may have seemed on paper, no? I mean, obviously, we didn't know that we were going to get that tag match, but pretty good show so far.
Yeah, no, it's been really smooth especially for a December SmackDown pay-per-view that doesn't have the strongest legacy. But No, it's been. I mean, the show's flowed well. There's not been any bad matches yet, and the only one that I guess kind of sucked was Boogie and Miz was 3 minutes. The rest has been well used. The ladder match 20 minutes, the Inferno match was fun. Benoit Chavo was fine, and this Cruiserweight I thought was pretty good too. So no, we're looking good heading into the final stretch.
We are. So when we come back from the break, we have two matches left. Neither of them for belts. No more title matches for the evening, and obviously we'll explain why when we get to the main event. But first, let's look at all the words. And as Mr. Zelnick says, pay all the bills. Because?
We're wrestling with them.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's Past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to what the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at Armageddon 2006 as we wrap up the calendar year of 06. First, I'm going to take you over to PlaceMation.com, though, where all your new podcasts and written pieces for the last couple weeks are up. Debut episode, Scott, a PTBN play and introduction is Brad Woodling, Glenn Butler, Jordan Duncan, Chad Campbell talking gaming. So check that out. It's on the PTBN Pop feed. Steve Riddle previewed this show by looking at Gregory Helms and Jimmy Wang Yang, so be sure to read his piece on that. A new Between the Sheets, episode 61, looking at September 14th through the 20th in 1998. A new Lucha Afterground, season 3, episode 2, brand new podcast here at PlaceMination.com. Very excited to have the guys on board, and they will be looking at weekly breakdowns of each Lucha Underground show, so be sure to check that out. Place to Be Network Rewind Series. Scott, you want to tell us about this one?
Yes, myself, of course, your host, Mr. Matt Morse, and Mr. Steve Willey. Since it was September, we decided to do Clash of the Champions 8, Fall Brawl from September of 1989.
There you go.
So we went through the card, and it was a very good show. Ben, Steve, and I did it, so check it out. It was very good.
And a dog.
Excellent show. And a dog.
Titans of Wrestling had a new episode as well, number 68, looking at Stampede with Kelly and Travis. Scott, a project I'm really excited about, I was part of the discussions to get this thing up and running, and that is the Match of the Week Club, spearheaded by our buddy Chad Campbell and Peter Saladino. But every week we're going to have a group of guys involved in this, and they're going to pick a match from outside the bubble of WWE, something that they want you to check out from somewhere around the world. And the concept is, if you want to take part in this, you have the main PTBN guys. This week was Stephen Graham, Glenn Butler, Peter, Brad Woodling, Tanner Tia, and Chad Campbell, reviewing one match from around the world of wrestling that you, the viewer, should seek out. So what we want you to do is watch the match. It's embedded in the post. Read their thoughts, and then share your thoughts either on eventually Pro Wrestling Only, on Twitter, on Facebook, email, get your thoughts to us. And then that'll be part of next week's column. So like a book club, we're going to regroup every week, and then you share your thoughts with the crew, and then they get posted into the piece along with the next week's match. So it kind of is a weekly cycle that'll be going on. So be sure to check that out. This week's match was La Mascara versus Dragon Lee from CMLL 9-2-2016. So nice interactive group piece here if you want to be part of PlaceMation.com's Match of the Week Club. New Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast, a new Who Gives a Flick piece, lots of stuff for you. All over PlaceMation.com. We had a brand new clotheslines and headlines last week. We looked at CM Punk's UFC fight. We looked at Vince McMahon's torn quad. Looked at Backlash. Looked back at Backlash. And, of course, if you liked Nate Milton walking you through Final Deletion, you'll love Nate Milton walking you through Delete or Decay. So Greg Phillips joined us for pretty much that whole episode, and we had a blast talking about that. So be sure to check that out, as well as a brand new Where the Big Boys Play, looking at Clash of the Champions number 22. And, of course, the NBA team is back as well, previewing the season. They're starting at the bottom and working their way up. And that's about it. Of course, check out our Vince DeVore refreshes every Tuesday and Thursday. PTBN Network Adventure every Wednesday. You can check out our free ebooks by clicking the link. You get all our Vintage Vault refreshes in ebook format, and they're completely free. And Scott, guess what? I don't have to tell people to go to PlayStation.com and go to the right-hand side and click Amazon anymore, because we have a dedicated link.
We do?
Can you believe it? Amazon.com/PlaceToBeNation. And that takes you right to Amazon, and it lets you go ahead and... did I get that link right? Let me double check, because I just tried it. It didn't work.
You said PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon.
Is that what it is? I had it backwards. Okay. Yeah. PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon is what it is.
Yep.
And that will take you right to Amazon. You don't have to go to PTBN anymore to click the link. You can if you want. But this
please do
you,
anyway. But
right. But this will take you directly to Amazon, and we'll still get that little bit of love through Amazon from your purchases. So be sure to check that out and follow us on social media.
Mm-hmm. Excellent job. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. New main event will be this week, as well as some other great sports pieces, etc. So just stay with us. It always gets better and better and badder. Okay. Back to Richmond. The second of the tri-main event that was promoted for this show, the other half of the old facing the young JR, we go from Infernos to... caskets. No, not caskets. Hearses. As this feud now continues and has reached like it's almost like third month, what have we gotten to now between these two?
Oh, there's always something going on with these crazy cats. On 12-1, Teddy Long. Oh, hang on. It's not a cat, but I just like threw a water off my table over here. On 12-1, Teddy Long opens SmackDown by announcing that Mr. Kennedy would face off against Undertaker in a Last Ride match, a pay-per-view. Later in the night, MVP and Undertaker fought to a no contest when Taker and Mr. Kennedy got involved. Well, I guess that's supposed to be Kane in one of those spots. A week later, Kennedy cut a promo in the ring, passing a hearse that was parked in the aisle on his way out. As he was talking, the hearse with no driver backed up to the ring, and Undertaker emerged out of the back. Kennedy was spooked and took off. Later in the show, Kennedy and Kane faced off, and MVP got involved in things, helping Kennedy beat down Kane. After some Undertaker theatrics, the lights went out, and Kennedy scampered off. On 12:15, Kane and Taker fought MVP and Kennedy to a double countout. So here we be. Good feud. I thought, again, this one, just like MVP, has helped to elevate Kennedy, been a good use of Taker. We get the usual long Taker entrance. Kennedy ducks and dodges the attack to start, bailing to the outside and then cautiously coming back in. Taker catches him and starts to slug away and then batters Kennedy around the ring, using the stairs and chucking him on top of the announce table. Kennedy survives and dodges a Taker charge to take over for a minute. Taker regains control outside, ramming Kennedy into the post. The fight spills down the aisle toward the hearse as Kennedy lands some strikes and tries to load Taker inside. Taker punches and kicks his way free and clubs Kennedy all the way back to the ring. Back inside, Taker crotches Kennedy across the bottom rope and then hits a superplex. Kennedy rolls outside and tries to grab a breather, but Taker's all over him. Taker tries to carry Kennedy to the hearse, but Kennedy slips down his back and grabs a sleeper that forces Taker to the ground. Kennedy loads Taker in the hearse, but Taker escapes before he can drive away. Taker slugs Kennedy back to ringside again, whipping him into open chairs, but Kennedy grabs a chair and starts to bash Taker with it. Taker keeps sitting up, shaking off every shot, and then chases Kennedy down the aisle. Kennedy scales a set by the entranceway, and Taker follows him. The trade blows up top, and Taker tries for a choke slam, but Kennedy throws him over the edge, and Taker crashes to the next level of the set. The crowd announces a hush as Kennedy climbs down and drags Taker to the hearse. Kennedy tries to get in the driver's seat, but Taker yanks him out and hits him with a chair. Taker swings at him with a pipe, but Kennedy ducks and he smashes the window. Kennedy gets busted open by another disgusting hard chair shot, and then Taker puts him on the roof and choke slams him on it. Taker hoists Kennedy up and tombstones him on the roof and then loads him in the hearse and drives off for the win. I thought this was a good brawl. Had a lot of intensity, a lot of hard offense and good flow. It never leaned one way for too long. I thought, just like MVP, Kennedy, you know, benefits despite the loss. He's already picked up some wins anyway, and now he's going toe-to-toe with Taker in a high-level feud. I thought Taker showed, you know, a lot too here, and I thought Kennedy's stock is rising big time. Good feud all around. All the matches pretty much delivered. I think this is a win for both guys. I think it's kept Taker rolling, and it's you know, raised Kennedy's profile. Both him and MVP have really benefited through all of this. And as a result, SmackDown's benefited because it's built two new, very valid upper mid-card stars.
Yes. And the match, I liked a lot. I forgot that I really liked it that much. I thought that it was going to be more like the sluggish, boring Taker JBL last ride from No Mercy 04, but this one is way better. Step one, this has been a great feud. And as you've said, This is a great use of Undertaker. We've come to the point now where, other than WrestleMania, where it's, at the time, still pretty much a guaranteed win, Taker has done a great job in these secondary times of the year, particularly this time of the year where it's always quiet between, you know, SummerSlam and the end of the year before we start the Rumble build, etc. Where Taker's good at kind of helping the mid-card kind of be elevated, and they need it to be elevated. And I think that's another reason why it seems like the roster is so healthy now on SmackDown, because now Taker, now Kennedy and MVP have felt more important. So huge thumbs up to Taker for putting this guy over. DQ win at No Mercy, and then the big upset in the First Blood at Survivor Series, and now here we are. And I think everyone knew Taker was going to win, but I don't think it mattered. Kennedy looks like a stud. Again, doesn't look like a coward or whatever. He went toe-to-toe with him. And it took some pretty gross shots at the end to, as we talked about again, more gross, disgusting chair shots. And Kennedy seems like he's been the recipient of almost all of them. But he definitely looks like a star here, and Taker did a great job. So great use of him in this feud. Step two, Kennedy has used every bit of this feud to get himself over. He has not coasted on these laurels. He's definitely worked his butt off over these, you know, 2.5-3 months with Taker. You don't get a feud with Undertaker and then coast. You absolutely do not. And Kennedy hasn't. 2007 should be a huge year for him if things continue for him. He even looks good coming out of this match, like MVP looked good coming out of the match with Kane. And step three, one thing about each match, they all told different stories. And, like, the No Mercy match was kind of Kennedy trying to eliminate his fears. Chapter two, the First Blood at Survivor Series, was a violence factor, and this one was simply survival. Get the guy in the car and drive off. And all three told a great story, including this one. So I was very happily surprised how good this match was because of that reason, that these guys told a great three-chapter story from No Mercy to Survivor Series to here. So The Undertaker wins the match, but everybody wins, including the fans, who were treated to a great feud. So there you go. Undertaker wins.
What's your stock on Kennedy MVP heading into 07?
Very high. Very high. Kennedy feels like a main eventer. No joke. Feels like a main eventer. MVP, not yet, but he's a little bit behind the curve because he started after Kennedy, but he's getting there. And Kane obviously doesn't have the cachet sachet that Taker does, but still legit. But Kennedy is a main eventer, my opinion, on SmackDown, main eventer. So even though losing this match, he comes off as a stud. And I think that, again, is more evidence to your theory earlier that the SmackDown roster feels bigger because these guys are now at the top of the card or ready to hit the top of the card.
Right. They're filling it out. You know, they've...
Yep. Yep.
They had a lot of lack of depth. They got Batista back to help shore up the main events. And now they're building. They're actually building guys in the undercard, in the midcard, which is nice. They're using Taker and Kane well to establish name guys. They're making their undercard titles mean something. The Cruiserweight titles and the tag titles mean something. Because they've had long-term champions that have been constantly on TV and pay-per-view. And, you know, they lose non-title matches and stuff, but whatever. They're constantly active and fending off challengers and picking up quality wins. Like, look at how wonderfully, for a brand that seemed dead in the water, they really rebuilt themselves throughout 06. I mean, and that was with losing Batista, which is a big part of the brand. You know, Kane is Kane, but he's helped shore things up, too. Like, these Kane and Taker being in the upper mid-card and now in the title picture is a big boon to the brand, you know?
Yep. No, absolutely.
It's helped elevate these other guys. And again, that combined with the steady champions and cruiserweights and everything else has made SmackDown to a show with some decent depth.
Yeah, it really has. And I think a lot of it has to do with these two feuds, Kane MVP and Taker Kennedy, because you took two guys who were just lower card and have made them 10 times more important.
You know, and Benoit, too, a very credible U.S. champion. Like, yeah, you have a really good, and the veteran presence, too, of a Regal and a Finley. You know, these guys all blended into the card well. It's a pretty nice roster when you look at it, unbelievably yeah. enough. They've somehow assembled a pretty, you know, the only thing they're really missing is top-level star power. Like, with Rey out, besides Taker and Batista, I mean, Booker's done a great job, but he's not selling pay-per-views on his own. So, right. we're kind of without name guys. That's the only thing they're really missing.
Yeah, they're missing some depth at the main event spot. That changes as 2007 begins, right. but for the moment, it is still a little thin. But obviously, we turn the corner, you know, we do get a bit of a boost. So Undertaker wins, but the match, but everybody wins. Now, JR, as is with every December pay-per-view, going back to 1995, we get a SC appearance.
Sure do. And that SC is Santa Claus, comes out, cuts a promo, and introduces the Diva Naughty or Nice contest. Crystal, Layla, Jillian, and Ashley come out. Santa hosts a contest as all four take turns stripping into lingerie and dancing. I thought they're all fine. Crystal and Layla, easily the best dancers of the four. JBL puts over Ashley's upcoming Playboy cover. Santa lets the crowd vote, but declares everyone the winner and then strips down and dances and reveals himself to be Big Dick Johnson. Segment was fine until the end. I thought it was still better than the usual Christmas shit, and it was kept pretty short in a good slot. So again, even with the usual crap, you know, with the Boogeyman and Miz and then this, they're still doing an okay job of limiting it, keeping it within its lane, keeping it short, not veering off and going crazy. And, you know, the last couple of years, I feel like the Santa stuff has just been endless. Definitely last year with the FBI shit. Like, this one felt to the point, as dumb as Big Dick Johnson is dancing, it's whatever. They got in and out. We saw some tits, and we got out of there.
Yeah, and Layla and Crystal. Actually, all four of them were very hachi-machi, but... Oh, my God. Layla just knows what to do. She really does. And Crystal was very good, too. Ashley just doesn't care. And
Crystal
Jillian.
Went into your checking account. I mean, Layla. We know that.
Yes. Yeah, she was, yeah. Early Layla, incredible hachi-machi. All right. Time now for our main event. And for the first time, well, not counting, well, I guess for the second time in three in the John. Yes, he is in this main event. And for the second time in 3 months, JR, nope, never mind. For the first time in a while, our main event of a pay-per-view, not a title match, but our champion's in it.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get here?
On 12-1, Teddy Long opened SmackDown by announcing that Mr. Kennedy would face off against Undertaker in a last ride match on the pay-per-view.
You just read that.
Yep. On 12-1, Teddy Long.
Sutton.
A lot of stuff happened on 12-1. That's why I'm getting all confused. On 12-1, Teddy Long brought Batista to the ring to talk about a title win. After that Undertaker-Kennedy segment, King Booker would interrupt the festivities and demand a title rematch. Finley then came out and said Booker didn't deserve the rematch, and Batista should defend the title against him instead. Long agreed with both men and booked a triple threat match for later in the show. Batista would win the match by defeating Finley. Afterwards, Booker and Finley argued backstage, and Long told them they'd have to team up at the pay-per-view against Batista and a partner of his choosing. The next week, Batista defeated Finley by DQ when Finley assaulted the champ with a shillelagh as he fended off King Booker. Booker and Finley would attack Batista's arm and left him laid out. And prior to 12:15, it was announced that John Cena would team up with Batista at the pay-per-view. SmackDown opened with Cena heading to the ring to talk about the show. Finley and Booker interrupted and vowed to injure Cena like they did Batista. Batista came out and helped protect Cena before Booker and Finley could attack. In the main event, Cena defeated Finley, and Booker came down after the bell, and they beat on Cena until Batista made the save. Mm-hmm. So, good push for Finley continues, and good to see Booker in the main event picture for now as well, hanging around. Yep. We've imported Cena to help with the ratings. A nice move, kind of makes it feel like a real super team being utilized. A good selling point, something you don't get to see often. However, on the flippity dip, it makes the match feel very obvious. Like, what were the chances Booker and Finley win this match here? Like 1% at the most. You know, very unlikely. So that hurt too. But like I said, the real selling point of this match is getting to see Batista and Cena team up, something you don't ever get to see, which is a benefit of the brand split that they've stuck to. makes stuff like this count. Match more about spectacle than ambiguity, like we said. Booker entrance still great. Batista gets a big pop, but Cena, I thought his pop was actually bigger than Cena's, but both are solid. Mm-hmm. Booker and Cena start things off. Old rivalry ignited. Cena controls early and both tag out to reset. Batista uses his power to work over Finley, slingshotted him neck first into the ropes and then having him fall back onto his knees. That was a cool spot. Batista gets a pin cover after muscle buster, but Booker breaks it up. Booker tags in and gets beat on by both men until he catches Cena in the eye and starts to work him over, getting a near fall and a sidekick. Cena recovers with a spinning slam and five-knuckle shuffle, but Booker slips out of the FU. Cena gets yes to FU, but Finley breaks it up. Batista comes in as things break down, allowing Booker to get the scepter from Charmel and jab it into Cena's throat. Finley and Booker tag in and out and keep Cena grounded. A little bastard shows up and sneaks in, but kicks himself in the head when Cena dodges him. And then Bastard stumbles back outside as Finley and Booker continue to control. Cena hits a DDT and makes a tag. Batista comes in and mows through both guys, but Finley busts up a Batista bomb. Cena recovers and hits Finley with a belly-to-belly, but Finley cuts him down with a clothesline outside and then jabs Batista's hamstring with a chair. Batista shrugs it off and hits Booker with a spinebuster and Batista bomb for the win. Not much of a match. It felt like more like a TV or Saturday Night's main event type of match versus a pay-per-view main event. The style power was cool, but never felt high stakes at all. Just a way to kill the month and finish off Batista or Booker for good. Booker's pretty much done as a main event threat. It was cool to see Cena and Batista together, but I thought the main event was just disappointing. It was short, all things considered, too. They don't really give much time. I thought it was kind of a soft finish to what had been a surprisingly good pay-per-view. And I want to talk about what else they could have done, but let's talk your steps first.
Okay. Yeah, I was a little disappointed in the end as well. And Cena and Batista did feel like a real stud team, though. But great comparison. It felt like a Saturday night's main event match, not a pay-per-view match. Although it did feel like a December pay-per-view match, I guess. Step one, well, that was my step one. Cena and Batista feel like stars. It did feel special, even though it didn't end special. Both pops were pretty good, but Batista is the blue brand guy. So, step two, I mean, it was a decent sprint. There was some good hard hitting. I think the other matches went longer because they were more... You could argue that the other matches on the pay-per-view were more important than this one. I think we knew that Booker was not going to win the title back. So this was more of a filler. As a matter of fact, let me ask you this, JR. Well, yeah, I'll ask you. Would you have put this match last? Would you have put Taker Kennedy last?
No, you could put this last. I mean, it's star power. It's like Mega Powers, Mega Bucks. Like that kind of line, along those lines. You know what I mean? Like,
okay. Okay.
You got your two main players, your two champions. Yes, the match feels meaningless, but now you got to have them close the show. You're selling the show on the back. Well, over the last 2 weeks, you're selling it on the back of the star power being a team.
Okay. All right. Just asking. And step three, the crowd actually was hot. Even being up and down for a lot of this show, they were pretty hot for the match. So I will say this, even though the match seemed kind of flat and, you know, TV fair rather than pay-per-view fair, the crowd did make it feel special. So I will give them that.
Sure. It's just, my only issue is there's no stakes to it. There's nothing.
Right.
Like, it's a real long shot that Booker and Finley were going to win. They didn't tease any dissension with Batista or Cena, so you would look at it and say, oh, you know, maybe they'll fight. You know, like, there was nothing, I don't know. Like, the hook was seeing them team. You know what I mean? Like, that was it. Like, you know, I don't know. There was no chance Booker and Finley were winning. Now, could they have done something weird to, like, put both titles on the line? I don't know. Does that make it less likely that they win, I guess? Like, a little bit, maybe it adds a little bit of juice. I don't know. I just felt like there was nothing to it.
Yeah, I do
like,
see that.
Think about all the TV matches we've talked about and all these fun facts. Like, Taker and Kane versus MVP and Kennedy, but you know, Cena and it was like all these TV SmackDown matches. This felt like you could have just put this in a fun fact and been a TV match.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they're really selling it on the back of getting to see Cena and Batista team up, I guess. I mean, I guess that was their thought process. Like, people would be interested enough to see them go to team up and work as a unit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I think your comparison is best that it was a Saturday's main event thing to kind of tie together these feuds and kind of, you know, Cena gives them a quick pop and Cena being utilized extensively in this stretch to kind of stretch things out for some other endeavors, like the Federline feud, which we'll get into more in the next vault. But to add him here doesn't – and it doesn't take shine away from Batista. Just makes both of them look like beasts. So the champions' side wins. Your World Heavyweight Champion Batista and your WWE Champion John Cena win our main event, and we are out of Richmond. All right, let us go now to our 2006-2007 Vintage Vault report card. Let's see first where this pay-per-view fits. So, JR, I'll do what I always do. I will give you the middle pay-per-view, and you tell me up or down, and we'll go from there. Is it better than the Bash?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it better than No Mercy? No Mercy has that four-way, the first Taker.
Yeah. All right, what's next after that?
SummerSlam. I don't think it's better than SummerSlam.
No. It's about even with No Mercy.
All right, so.
It depends what you liked better. So what was the big match No Mercy? Was that Benoit Regal?
That was Benoit Regal, which is on our best match list.
Right,
and then
so
you have the four-way for the main event.
Right, so I guess it depends what you think is better. The ladder match here. To me, the rest of the cards are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
So do you like what match do you prefer, I guess?
Regal Benoit is so good.
One that was a little disappointing versus the rest, or no? Was Finley Regal the one that was kind of goofy?
Finley Regal was the goofy one. Benoit Finley Judgment Day was exceptional.
Right.
And then you had Regal Benoit here. I think Regal Finley, that's the one from
Bash.
From Bash.
There's one that was kind of goofy that had like all the little bastard stuff. I think it was Regal Finley I'm thinking of.
It was Regal Finley. It was Bash because that was the
oh, right. Oh, the liver.
The liver enzymes on Lashley. So I would put this.
Do you like the ladder match or Benoit Regal better? I guess that's the question.
Oh, wow. You know what? I think I like Benoit Regal better.
Okay. Then I would put this right after No Mercy. I think they're both dead even. Which says a lot for this show. I mean, it over-delivered in my eyes.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely, we're putting this high, well higher than I thought it would be. So, all right, so we have 12 pay-per-views in the books on our report card so far. So from 12 to 1, Vengeance is the worst. Cyber Sunday, December to Dismember, Survivor Series, Backlash, Great American Bash, Armageddon, No Mercy, SummerSlam, Judgment Day, Unforgiven, and still number one, One Night Stand.
So pretty balanced. SmackDown's a little more top-heavy. I mean, Unforgiven's the highest, so like Raw's got the best, but although SmackDown shows fill in the rest of the spots, Judgment Day, Armageddon, No Mercy, seems like it's been more consistently solid.
Yes. Nope, definitely. And the bottom two stinkers are both Raw's.
Right.
So that tells you something, too. I can't see. There's no match here that's. I mean, Miz Boogeyman, you can't really put in the worst match because it wasn't really meant to be anything spectacular.
No. Worst match to me, you got to factor in expectations.
Right.
That was meant to be a quick garbage match.
Yeah. So we have four matches still under worst match. The Braun Panties match from Great American Bash, Lita versus Mickie James from Cyber Sunday, Kane versus Kane from Vengeance, and Kane versus Big Show from Backlash. All right. Do you put the ladder match on our best match list?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Right now we have 10 matches.
Okay.
Is it better than Edge Cena from SummerSlam?
Yeah.
Is it better than Foley Flair from SummerSlam?
What's after that?
That's fifth. Fourth is Benoit Finley from Judgment Day.
No.
All right. So put it between those two. Four-way.
I don't know. Do you think it's better than Flair Foley?
If it is, it's not by much.
I say yeah, because Flair Foley, the ending is so stupid.
Yeah, Molina kind of fucks that shit up at the end. All right. So we have now, we haven't decided if we're going to just stick with top five or just list all of them. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that when we get to the end of
But this ladder match surprised me because I didn't remember it being as good as it was. I always thought it was like pretty good, but the one spot carried it and ended up being more complete of a match than I expected.
And yeah, no, that is
20
true.
Minutes. I mean, that's a long time for the kind of match.
I forgot it was that long, to be honest with you. So at the moment, we have 11 matches. Let's see, 11 matches on our best match list. London and Kendrick versus the Pitbulls from Great American Bash. DX versus the McMahons and the Big Show from Unforgiven. Triple H versus Edge versus Cena from Backlash. Regal versus Benoit from No Mercy. Edge versus Cena from SummerSlam. Foley versus Flair from SummerSlam. The four-way ladder match we just talked about from Armageddon. Benoit versus Finlay from Judgment Day. Edge, Foley, Lita versus Dreamer, Funk, and Beulah from One Night Stand. Cena and RVD from One Night Stand. And still at the top of our list, the TLC, Edge versus Cena from Unforgiven. So we have four shows left.
So competition is on the way.
Big time, yes. We got a few big things coming up in the next four shows that could counter that TLC. We'll take a look. So there you go. There is Armageddon 2006.
In the books. There you go. All right. We'll be back. We are off next week. Got some vacation going on. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. We'll kick off 2007, if you can believe that, with New Year's Revolution. And then I'm going to be honest with you guys. We're a little spotty from now till December. So we're going to miss some weeks. We're going to be here for some weeks. We got some stuff planned. We're going to try and get you what we can. But you know what? It's been a big deal 4 years ago. But these days, we got so much for you. And you can hear us other places, too.
Exactly.
Be sure you subscribe to all of the feeds and rate us on iTunes. That's really would be swell of you. Leave some comments and feedback there. The more ratings we get, especially good ones, the more visibility our broadcast network will get as well. And remember, use that brand new PlayStation.com/Amazon link anytime you order something from Amazon, which I know you do. So next week, like I said, we'll be off here. Scott, you got a main event this week?
I do, and we have another debut. We have, of course, one of the core four returning, Mr. Ben Morris, who hasn't been on in a while. And debuting on main event this week will be my partner on our weekly campus hot takes, Mr. Logan Crosland will be joining us on main event. So we will preview Clash of Champions coming up Sunday.
All right, very sexy. Next week's close-in headlines, I'm actually going to be off. Like I said, a little vacation going on, so it'll be Steve Willie, Nate Milton, and the one and only Glennie Bunn, Glenn Butler, stepping into the big chair for the man here. So I'm sure they'll be breaking down Clash of Champions. They'll be talking some ROH. They'll talk some NXT. I think they have some plans there to talk about what's going on in the world of Full Sail. So be sure to check all that out, PlayStation.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, all the social media avenues. Until 2 weeks from now, we'll be back here talking New Year's Revolution 07. I'm Scott. You're Justin. Something like that. We're out. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
We should have done this show on December 1st. Everything else happened then.
Biggest SmackDown ever. I'm going to have to go watch that.
It's like a five-hour SmackDown. Nine matches, Teddy Long, seven announcements.
It's crazy. Well, that's the right answer. Push it into high gear. Off to the high seas.
Yes.
I think he did when he packed it up and brought it back to the crib. Just a little something to show you how we live. Everything I wanted, man, it seems so serious. That's that shit. So if you gon' do it just like this. Did you realize? Living's harder than dying. For me, giving up's way harder than trying. Lauryn Hill said her heart was in Zion. I wish her heart still was in rhyming. Cause who the kids gonna listen to? Huh? I guess me if it isn't you. Last week I paid a visit to the institute. They got the dropout keeping kids in the school. I guess I clean up my act like Prince do. If not for the pledge, at least for the principal. They got the CD, then got to see me drop gems like I dropped out of P.E. They used to feel invisible. Now they know they invisible. Did you realize? Hey, hey,
champion. Run us in the mark, you can pop the gun. Stand up, stand up. Here he comes. Tell me what it takes to be number one. Tell me what it takes to be number one. This is the story of champion. Run us in the mark, you can pop the gun. Stand up, stand up. Here he comes. Tell me what it takes to be number one. Number one. Did you realize that you were a champion?
Yes, I did. So I packed it up and brought it back to the crib. Just a little something to show you how we live. Everybody want it, but it ain't that serious.
That's that shit. So if you don't do it, do it just like this. Like this.